Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio.
Rolling into another briskly paced hour of the program, but we'll always make time for your interaction. Phone calls taken selectively, 1-800-636-8686. It's an ATP Friday. Keep all of your thoughts coming. Emails, RomanAvatake.com. Twitter's your best bet, BW Weber, Weber with two Bs. With the countdown to first touch underway in Qatar, although just as an aside, and I'm not being xenophobic on a Big Word Friday. In fact, this was a front page story in the New York Times. I know, that makes me a snob. The other day, I remember during the first Gulf War, we had a conversation. Is it gutter? Is it cutter? And I know there's an Arabic difference between the K sound, what have you. We're going with Qatar. Qatar. In 60 minutes, the United States takes on the English team. Because I'm at a British sports pub, apparently, in our Regal Studios here in Southern California. In fact, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. So I have been a little bit loose. I'm not like Lane Kiffin with specificity. When I referred to the U.S. versus the U.K., I was looking for symmetry. And then I have the soccer men in blazers coming at me and producer Tom and Garrett Ritt, who is now completely checked out because the pregame for the United States and England is underway.
Game on.
Guys, I'm aware we had the tie. Oh, I was so disappointed. Almost didn't come into work today. I care about this stuff, but sometimes for the sake of the show in show business, we look to have turns of phrases. But thank you, because you know I'm the most anal guy in the world. If somebody was saying UK, I'd be screaming my radio. It is the United States against England. A rematch of the War of 1812. How did that turn out? Where's Georgie Best when you need him? I now feel like I've been pushed in the corner and I got to flex my soccer knowledge. I will play goals. I'll just do it off my phone. I've been calling Pac-12 soccer since 2013, the last 3 years, by myself. You know how much knowledge I spew for 90 minutes to cover up that I can't tell who the players are because I'm 90 yards away from them? I was like, take you behind the curtain. So I appreciate soccer. We're going to talk just a little bit of soccer in 20 minutes, along with your reaction, if Tom feels like working, because he's also enjoying the pregame show as well, with the Netherlands and Ecuador. They have settled things, a 1-1 stalemate. Could come down to the aggregate total goals to get out of that group. Oh, Ram, what a magnificent performance it was against Wales earlier today, making our result, go USA, go USA, look even worse. Anywho, we'll talk a little bit of football in 20 minutes. Going to kick things off, getting back to the NFL. So if you weren't with us for the majority of first hour of the program, gave you my takeaways on what the Cowboys demonstrated yesterday. I believe in that defense. I believe in Dak. I think the play calling has evolved, so it's not too Zeke-centric. It was tight ends day, after all, in Dallas, and everybody gets to jump in that. It's not a bucket. It is a kettle, and they're teasing there. I love Dalton Schultz. I just love saying that name because I'm always thinking about Dalton from Roadhouse. As an aside, I realize there are no new ideas in entertainment, in life. If you think about television now with 5,000 streaming platforms and nothing on, don't we have several buckets, not kettles, buckets of ideas? You got cop shows, you have romance shows, you have the notion of mystery, who's the man behind the curtain. They are all time-honored tropes, if you want to go back to the Greeks and Romans. Okay, think about the evolution of Hollywood. Why are they remaking Roadhouse? It is a perfect motion picture. Now I'm 98 years old. And yes, I use chewing gum as well to move my molars and incisors. And I know the answer because they think they can make a buck out of it, like Point Break, which was a perfect movie that should never have been bastardized. And here comes Bob freaking Menery going to use his wacky voices with me and Chuck Liddell and Jake Gyllenhaal reimagining Pain Don't Hurt. But when Dalton Schultz was scoring those touchdowns, and yes, I'm on a tangent here, every time I hear Dalton and there are T's in there, I just start thinking about every great moment of Roadhouse. Roadhouse is a perfect movie. Ben Gazzara. And people don't know what Ben Gazzara's career was before he's driving around being the villain in that town. Tell me I'm wrong on Twitter. What is the flaw of Roadhouse? B.W. Weber, Weber with two B's. So, back to the script. Where am I? Page 17 here. Buffalo and Detroit. Part of me was going to lead with that game because I thought it was the most interesting overall matchup, especially the end. But then I said, wait a minute, I'm talking about the Lions. I won't be back for hour number two. Lion fan, I feel your pain, and I'm not going to follow my instincts because too bad we're on TV, and the staff now loves when I do the fake hustle. Look at how hard I worked, everybody. I wrote down notes on a large manila folder. But I'm scribbling away, because I have no freaking life, about Dan Campbell losing his mind. I couldn't figure out, and I don't think he knew, between the lack of sensible clock management and coherent play calling, what the goal was at the end of the game. Because when he's not calling the timeouts, and the answer is, it's the Lions. That's all you have to say. Doesn't matter who the coach is. Doesn't matter who the quarterback is. And this year's team is much better. Arguably should have won that game. And I know we're on CBS Sports Radio. We're not on TV today. I'll just say this quickly. Burn the tape. Tony Romo's got to dial it down. And for the money they're paying him, somebody in New York City should say, hey, Tony, can we have lunch? Talk 10% less. Just that's all I'm asking. I understand the energy. I get that you, as a fan, love him. Public's never wrong. But the tonnage of words, he talked more than Tony Dungy and Jason Garrett combined. Now, look, Dungy and Garrett didn't say anything, but just in terms of quantity is not always quality. Jim Nance is the best, but Jim's now, I think, trying to keep up with Romo. There was a lot going on in that game. And, oh, my goodness, you jinxed the kicker. That actually finally worked after the 400th time. But as that game is unfolding, and mind you, the Lions did miss the field goal. Badgley never misses, literally never misses. They gave up a safety because of the Lions. They still have a chance to win the game. And then Campbell is distracted by trying to bite people's kneecaps off because he doesn't know fully what he wants to do. So I'm sitting there thinking, timeout, and I like to watch along on Twitter. And I'm Brian Weber in for Jim Rome. We're live on this Black Friday. You can slide in at 1-800-636-8686. ATP Friday coming up in the last hour of the program. Emails, rome@haveatake.com. Open for business on Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two Bs. So I'm thinking timeout. It doesn't come. Third and one, I'm thinking, okay, run to have the clock run because you don't want to have too much time for Josh Allen. But I'm understanding that Buffalo's got a good interior defense. So I'm thinking, all right, maybe you throw across the middle. I did not see that play call, and guys like Bill Bardwell broke it down. That should have worked. There was enough secondary separation. That could have been a touchdown, but again, we're talking about Jared Goff. So you have to factor that into the play call. You assemble all of that, enough time on the clock. Josh Allen, phenomenal. Diggs, another great catch. Game over. So where are we on Buffalo right now? How differently do we view them? I'm not going to destroy them as hard as other people did for the gag performance against Minnesota because I don't think Minnesota is that good. I think Minnesota's gotten damn lucky. Now, you can counter with scoreboard. I understand. But remember, that was the fifth time this year Minnesota won a game when trailing with 2:30 or less left in regulation. Some of those games should have gone the other way. That's just the statistical regression to the mean. Still, if Josh Allen doesn't do his Nathan Peterman impersonation, that sequence of events never happens, and they still had a chance to win it in overtime. Because somehow, after his Joe Pisarcik moment, the only thing he couldn't do, he did. If he took a safety against Minnesota, that's okay. The ball comes loose, they still get the field goal. So, what's the summation on Buffalo? I don't view them any differently than I did a month ago. Okay, some challenging losses. I'll do my Dan Hawkins. It's not intramural football, brother. It's the NFL. And I don't want to be as reductionist as it's a week-to-week league. You watch these games, right? Everybody does, the ratings indicate. Things shift. So the Jet loss, to me, was a reflection of just how powerful that Jet defense is. And Robert Saleh, as a aside, and Jim covered it in real time on Wednesday when the news broke, did the only thing he could do. There was no way he could let Zach Wilson play. Now, think about the timing. They're taking on the Bears. Nice call. Because if you've not looked at the schedule, after all, it's a holiday weekend for you. It's my job. Jets coming up at Minnesota, at Buffalo. So if you're going to make this change, you make it now. Now, you could say, statistically, Mike White, and what does it say about Joe Flacco? We're not looking his way, but they shouldn't. Mike White cannot play any worse than Wilson played against the Patriots. And I don't want to be Captain Hyperbole. That was the most unwatchable game I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of bad football. And I try to push out the remnants of the New York patois, but I grew up when the Giants were horrendous. I gave you Pisarcik. Those were the teams of my youth. I've seen some awful football. That game on both sides, because the Jets' defense was so stellar, and Mac Jones looked terrible. I still don't know what happened last night with Mac Jones. To me, that's a referendum on Minnesota's defense. Remember, they came into the game number 19 in the league in points allowed. Mac Jones is not going to have that kind of awakening every week, especially with Matt Patricia being allowed to call the plays because Bill Belichick can do whatever the hell he wants. He's got all of his relatives on the staff. Who's going to tell him no until Robert Kraft gets tired of losing in the first round of the playoffs? But I didn't have a massive the Bills are fading takeaway after the Jet game. We'll talk about it coming up in the final hour of the program when we check in with Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. I think we still don't know fully the status of that elbow injury for Josh Allen because he just doesn't look the same, and he's not going to be like Aaron Rodgers and say, oh yeah, by the way, I got a torn ulnar muscle in there. Dr. Aaron Rodgers, not the only physician in the house. Where's Dr. Chow when you need him? He's not working on a Black Friday. He's earned the right to have the day after Thanksgiving off. But as I look at Buffalo overall, and I don't get that wrapped up in Pro Football Focus, I got into sports because I was told there'd be no math involved. I like storytelling, narratives. Plus, when the numbers refute my opinion, I don't want them to be in the conversation. But if you look at Pro Football Focus, they'll tell you that Buffalo and Philadelphia have the most complete rosters in football, and the eyeball test would support that. Now, what about Odell Beckham Jr. to Buffalo? Okay. Do they really need him? I don't think that's the weakness. Now, some of that is just a sign we're going all in. I don't think that locker room needs that. I think this is a very good Buffalo team. And I'm not even going to say that Odell's going to be a distraction because we saw enough of the maturation last year. Although I am as cynical as they come, what was the motivation last year? To play for this next deal, and he thought he'd be with the Rams before he tore the ACL. He was a big part of that march to the Super Bowl, but I don't think there's any necessity. There's not a need to bring in Odell Beckham Jr. Dallas, to me, looks like the destination. Buffalo, as currently constructed, and let's hope the Von Miller injury news is not too severe. We'll get you the latest with our update coming up at the bottom of the hour. That's a defense that has solidified the secondary with Tre'Davious White coming back from the knee injury. Allen, to me, top three quarterback. You know about the receivers. The issue is Josh Allen cannot be your leading rusher. And that was the case again yesterday. And I realize that they're looking for more balance with the play calling. And a lot of that is in the moment, empowering your quarterback to make the right decision. But he is giving up years of the back end of his career by putting his body on the line. And that's also a reflection of how badly he wants it. But a lot of franchises would have cratered after the 13 seconds last year in Kansas City. That is not Buffalo. I believe in them as much as anybody. I believe in America. Godfather Saga on several platforms yesterday, if you were flipping around, because I wouldn't be a middle-aged guy from the suburbs if I haven't quoted the Godfather trilogy at least twice to begin the show. So as we slot these teams in the AFC, on that upper tier, how could I parse Kansas City other than they make games interesting, but they always find a way? Chargers are going to charger, and I don't even want to destroy L.A., pains me to say it, for what they did defensively, because that was Mahomes just being a magician on Sunday night. I think Miami is one of the most intriguing teams in the league. I love the vibe of Mike McDaniel. That defense, though, is going to tighten things up, and Tua has taken enough steps forward when healthy, clearly emboldened by having Hill and Waddle to throw the football to. But think about what Tua has dealt with. Meantime, Alexi Lalas is screaming at the top of his lungs for some reason. I got distracted there. We have the television monitors on. It's all about the USA getting set to take on England in 45 minutes in Qatar in World Cup competition. When the game starts, I'll ignore it because I don't want you flipping away. But I'm being a responsible journalist letting you know when the game starts. Tua has faced not only the adversity of his penchant for getting injured, and that's not his fault. That's misfortune dating back to Alabama. The horrendous decision-making that allowed him back on the field against Buffalo, the nightmare scenario with the whole world watching against Cincinnati. Think about, though, what he's had to tune out. How many other quarterbacks has this franchise flirted with? They were into the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes? Watson? We know it's been documented. They were breaking every tampering rule that exists in the NFL bylaws by not only flirting with Tom Brady, what's an appropriate metaphor I can use during the daytime with kids in the car? Canoodling. Love that word. Heavy petting from my youth. They were getting it on with Tom Brady. And, oh, by the way, sources close to me indicate, I know a couple people, you've probably heard this, conventional wisdom says it was a done deal. Sean Payton and Tom Brady were going to Miami until the Brian Flores lawsuit. And that changed everything. If I know that, you think Tua has not heard that? I give him credit. I'm not putting him in the Hall of Fame. He's out there grinding. And he's got a coach who believes in him. And if Tua's not the solution in 2 years, McDaniel will coach up the next guy. So I got no issues with Miami. Oh, by the way, if you've looked ahead to Sunday's schedule, coming off the bye, they take on Houston. Thank you very much. Doesn't matter if it's Kyle Allen or Davis Mills, the turnover machine. Houston, a one-win club. That's another victory for Miami. So you got Kansas City, Buffalo, Miami. I don't see a lot of separation between them. I know what Buffalo did, taking on the Chiefs a month ago. Tennessee's the team I can't get the handle on. And we'll talk more about the Patriots coming up to start the final hour of the program. I don't want to go all the way down to the wild cards because it's becoming convoluted, all the more complicated with the Patriots' loss last night. Tennessee, we've been burned by them before. Remember, they were the one seed last year in the postseason. Cincinnati got on that dynamic roll. But I got to give them props for the 0-2 start, one of those losses to the Giants. They won 7 of 8. Only loss in overtime on the road in Kansas City when Tannehill couldn't go and Malik Willis could do absolutely nothing. It was amazing he was even able to get the handoff exchange done. That's how overwhelmed he looked. But at the same time, here's a Titan team that now has lost 3 consecutive playoff games, win the division, host a playoff game, Derrick Henry healthier than a year ago. So that to me, and again, this is not earth-shattering analysis. If I got to come up with the teams that I have a degree of confidence in, but here's how I'll differentiate as we wind down. Beyond that, I don't believe in anybody else. So if I'm narrowing the Super Bowl window from the AFC, I'm comfortable going Kansas City, Miami, Buffalo. I know I'm overlooking Baltimore, but Baltimore's defense has taken a step back. Once more, they are the Chargers of the East Coast with injuries every year. I don't know who their trainer is or what's in the water. Maybe it's a byproduct of The Wire. Blame Omar. I miss Omar. He ain't coming back through that door. And we know that Lamar Jackson has had his issues in the postseason. So Kansas City, Miami, Buffalo, and then everybody else. I will talk Patriot football along with the Vikings. How much should we be embracing this team? Don't just tell me you are what your record says you are, because you got to watch these games. You'll have takeaways that matter based on your vision as well. I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome. Next segment will be concise, including your interaction. So hit me up with your tweets, BW Weber, Weber with two Bs, 1-800-636-8686, 20 minutes, the latest on Lane Kiffin to Auburn, plus the college football playoff scenarios with Rivalry Weekend rolling on. Looking forward to my first conversation with Chip Patterson of CBSSports.com. Straight ahead, I'm playing to the room, and my room is two people, barely acknowledging I'm here. In 40 minutes, United States v. England. World Cup in Qatar. Did I mention I saw Pele in 1977? You know why I know he was good? I was there. I will use that horrible Howard Cosell impersonation to link things. Shouldn't soccer be a little bit more mainstream by now? That's the story I was telling in 1977. Football versus football in the fall. That's coming up. Always a pleasure to be in for Jim Rome. I'm having a great time with you. I'm Brian Weber. You're in the jungle on CBS Sports Radio. Brian Weber with you. Always an honor to be in for Jim. I'm looking forward to Jim's anecdotes from the long holiday weekend. What did he say? Have 17 people coming over to the Rome house yesterday. So nobody shares the story better than the Hall of Famer, and he'll achieve that goal on Monday. I'm just keeping the chair warm, but hopefully you've enjoyed a lot of NFL analysis, a lot of college football. We're heading back on campus in less than 15 minutes. Looking forward to my first conversation with someone whose coverage I've enjoyed on a variety of platforms. It's Chip Patterson. You read him on CBSSports.com. You see him on CBS Sports HQ with the United States and England and World Cup action coming up in 30 minutes or so. I'll give you a few thoughts on the state of soccer here in the States. As always, more reaction. Bella B getting in early. Does this disqualify my friend from winning the ATP? We'll find out. Judges, we'll find out in the final hour of the program. Now that McRibs are a thing of the past, what will you do with all the money you save? Botox, obviously. I'm here in Southern California. I'm trying my best to go through the midlife crisis with every cliche I can. Speaking of canoodling, now I'll do this in 15 seconds. I don't partake in online dating anymore, mostly because no one looks like their pictures. Myself included. Self-reporting. When I put up my headshot, I'm wearing makeup. Now with filters, nobody looks authentic. Plus, I'm so charming. Wouldn't you want to meet me in person? So I was out a few weeks ago and I was chatting with someone, clearly younger, but from the East Coast, different sensibility, and you never say how old you are, but I'm thinking, I don't know, 33, which would only be 20 years younger than me, but in the range. Look, I'm living a Southern California cliche, big lease car, studio apartments, all front, Botox, pal. So when I found out the companion was 28, after I asked after a while, that was something that I viewed as a disqualifier, so that did not last long. And secondly, and I don't know if this is generational or probably just me, I have encountered this even with my nieces. No, my legitimate nieces, not like Hugh Hefner. They're teenagers. What is it with young people who don't want to use the phone at all? Now, they don't want to talk on the phone. I get that. And a voicemail is like sending someone the plague. I can't even get text return by my young relatives, and I'm trying to get them Christmas presents. And when I finally talked to them yesterday, I said, I'm not asking for a lot. How about a return? Well, you should be on TikTok. Now, look, a man's got to know his limitations. I should not be on TikTok. And I get it's more than dancing videos. And I'm not looking to troll and meet people, but the response from people who are in my will, if I pass away, Ritt takes over the final 90 minutes of the show. I got to talk to you about the last installment of the Garrett Ritt Show. We'll do that offline. And my nieces get the $37 I've made in broadcasting the last 31 years. They're telling me go to TikTok if I want to communicate with them. I don't know how I got on that aside. Oh, yeah. So the money I'm there. There's your answer, Bella B. All my money is going for lousy dates. Ken and Essay, Webs, I take the Ole Miss job. Oh, this is good producing. I should have read this in advance. But I prefer a young co-ed instead. Sincerely, Pervin Liar, hashtag hump day.
That's devastating. Heartbreaking.
It's a good thing we're not on TV. I am blushing badly. Who seems more pervish? Perv or Uncle Brian, based on that story? The point of the story was people under the age of 40 do not want to react on the phone at all.
Get out of Dodge.
Or maybe it's just me. Finally, Alan's doubling up, but he was entertaining with the first submission.
250.
Oh, this is based on my Roadhouse aside. Brian, not only is there a Roadhouse remake coming up, but I read a Bullet remake is coming. No, no, no. I'll go no senor, no senor on that. You cannot duplicate the cool of Swayze or McQueen. Stop the madness, Hollywood. Alan in Manitoba's on a heater. Wore the smell of dive bars and tire smoke. Very nice, Dalton. Pain don't hurt. Going to make that our huge email brought to you by our friends at Old Trapper. Listen up, clones. Not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper's original, old-fashioned teriyaki, hot and spicy, and peppered all come in 4-ounce bags so you can sample different flavors to find the best one for you. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? And I can see the tower of beef just behind Garrett Ritt, who is still reveling in what he thought was a brilliant edition of the Garrett Ritt Show. Mm. The crowd might say otherwise.
Thank you.
We're doing 3 minutes of soccer because I have to control my need to show off my knowledge in this room. And these guys are now saying, okay, old guy, you want to tell me another story? I gave you Georgie Best along the way. Here's my thought about the macro view. And this is going to sound contrarian because I understand the mass appeal of soccer. Not only globally, it's a beautiful game. That's our most popular sport. I think it should be even bigger in the United States at this stage. Because my generation, again, 1977, I'm 7 years old, dragging my old man to Giant Stadium for the farewell tour of Pelé. We love soccer because I was terrible at baseball. By the sixth grade, they wouldn't pick me anymore. I was not moving on to Pony Colt or Babe Ruth. Anybody could play soccer. So I'm running around on defense. I'm not any good, but I'm running around. At least I'm doing something. I played soccer all the way through eighth grade when I realized I had no athletic talent. If I was going to get into the athletic world at all, I'd be clutching a microphone, spewing hot takes. So if that's 1982... when all my friends played soccer, and we all loved the NASL as it was dying, and I'm going to watch indoor soccer, the New York Arrows, drawing 15,000 people at Madison Square Garden. How about the great Preki when you need him with the Kansas City Whiz? I'm saying just from an overall standpoint, given the demographics of the United States, given the global popularity of soccer, I think it should be even bigger here in the U.S. Now, that day is coming because you want to know why the NFL is monetizing everything they can right now? Smart owners know this is the top of the market because no parent with half a brain is going to let their kid play high school football or even contact football on the peewee level. It's going to become more and more marginalized, sadly, like boxing. The only people who get involved with boxing are those who have to. And my people, you know how many fighters were Irish Brian Weber? Because they had to fight their way out of the slums of the Bronx and Brooklyn because boxing has always offered opportunity, as in the inner city, basketball has. So I'm not saying football is going to go away next week, but have you seen all of the NFL promos promoting flag football? They want to make a segue, not tomorrow, not next week. Look, I'm the guy who told you 10 years ago on the Brian Weber show before it got canceled. That was the penultimate version. Finally. There will be two teams in London. Not one, two. I'm going to shift that focus. There'll be two European teams. One in Germany, one in London. They can play each other, and they'll have the international series expanded. That's going to happen. I was only off a couple years. I'm saying in the next 10 to 15 years, soccer will blow past the NFL and be where I thought it would be by now, based on my prism of expectations back in 1982. And there's your breakdown of the United States at England. Look, I'm going to hold it up so the staff can see. I have horrendous Qatar oppressive laws. I got a whole soliloquy. I don't want to bum you out. But that's one of the reasons I'm having a hard time connecting to this event. I can't overlook the horrendous, horrible, abysmal decisions made by that corrupt regime. I can't overlook the graft and bribery that have brought this spectacle of sport to a place it has no business being. Enjoy the game, everybody. And Ritt has already checked out. I know I'm 2 minutes late for the update. We're going to get there now. Coming up, college football. There's nothing corrupt about that clean sport, right? What's the latest on Lane Kiffin? How realistic is it Ohio State could lose tomorrow to Michigan and still sneak into the playoffs? We'll cover it all with Chip Patterson from CBSSports.com. First, here's your sports.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio.
We roll on a Black Friday. Great to have you with us. I am open to taking a phone call or two. Isn't that magnanimous in the final hour of the program? 1-800-636-8686. It's an ATP Friday. We'll get there in 60 minutes from now. Emails, RomanHaveATake.com. Hit me up on Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two Bs. Back to the NFL in less than 20 minutes, but I've been consistent. I love college football more than the National Football League. I said it, and I'm looking forward to my first conversation with a guy whose work I've enjoyed over the years, Chip Patterson. You read him on CBSSports.com. You see him on CBS Sports HQ. Chip, Brian Weber with you. How are you?
Brian, thank you for the kind words. Love to hear about your passion for college football. That is something that we share right off the jump. So looking forward to chopping it up with you. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Part of me just wants to go through all of the what-if scenarios. And I got Clemson sneaking into the playoffs, contingent on a USC loss to Notre Dame tomorrow, and TCU losing. Probably, I think, to Iowa State, but we'll get there. I have to start with Lane Kiffin because he demands it. And I thought that post-game soliloquy was ridiculous. Now, I understand Lane enjoys the moment, and Lane's all about Lane. And he's going to be peppered with questions after the Egg Bowl. But, Chip, irrespective of his intent, and that's the key word, because he was playing the semantic games, I've not accepted any job, I intend to be here next year, wouldn't he be better served by simply saying, guys, I'm only talking about the game?
Maybe, but he does like a bidding war.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Sexton's clients do like to be able to have multiple SEC programs out there trying to run it up on each other. I think that I saw from Lane Kiffin, first of all, his internet reaction to those reports from earlier in the week, all the way through his post-game press conference. You know, he is as much playing the semantics game with, you know, whether or not he is interested in the Auburn job as much as he is trying to remind Ole Miss that if you want to keep me, then you need to meet some demand.
But, Chip, and isn't that unseemly?
I don't think that Lane Kiffin cares about seemly. I really don't. And, like, I think that Lane Kiffin at this point in his career, he is just, like, he has weathered so much. He's got so much moss on him at this point that he is going to, like, do what is best for Lane Kiffin. And what is best for Lane Kiffin is to have Ole Miss freaking out that he might leave for Auburn and have Auburn freaking out that he might stay at Ole Miss. I think that he is being, if not advised, he is at least internally motivated to try and make both of these SEC programs with the potential for a big contract to want to bend over backwards to be able to make it happen.
And that's a rational explanation. I just think the optics are terrible. But this is college football we're talking about. And if we continue to look at the coaching situation, if it's not Lane Kiffin, who are the other names that you think are legitimate candidates to be the next head coach at Auburn?
So, Brian, that's why it's interesting, because I have, you know, Brandon Marcello from 24/7 Sports is somebody who's very plugged in with the Auburn community. And from the moment that Brian Harsin was fired, he indicated that Lane Kiffin was the number one option. And I maintain that Lane Kiffin might have not even decided one way or the other whether he would choose Ole Miss or Auburn. But I do think that Auburn's decision makers are going to wait to hear a no or obviously a yes before they start to open this thing up. And when it opens up, that's where it becomes very interesting because there is a question of whether the SEC, which reportedly was not interested in welcoming back Hugh Freeze a few years ago, whether the SEC would be open to welcoming back Hugh Freeze to the conference and whether he would be a candidate for the job. There are a number of coaches who are currently out of coaching, either formerly at the professional or college level, who would be able to step in right away, who maybe even have been working to assemble their staff in a way that they could hit the ground running and maybe save Auburn's signing class. And look, I am not going to rule out that Auburn would do the incredibly emotional thing and promote Cadillac Williams. I would not advise it, but I think that if they get told no by a couple of options in a row and Cadillac has this team, if Auburn were to upset Alabama, then it becomes really interesting. But even if Auburn is competitive and continues to show the fight that we've seen from the Tigers over the recent weeks, then there is a potential that they could go with a more of the heartwarming story. Though, again, I'm just going to speak from my own perspective and say that with the challenges of running that job in that conference, that the heartwarming emotional hire might not be great in a sport, in a league that is very cold-blooded.
And we've seen that over the years. Just think about Clay Helton, wonderful man, never should have been the head coach at USC, and I say that as an alum. We're talking college football with Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, CBS Sports HQ. Before I go through my favorite thing this time of the year, all of the scenarios, let's talk actual football. How do you see the matchup between Ohio State and Michigan? And any sense, you're plugged in, what are you hearing about the availability of both Michigan running backs, Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards?
I don't have a beat on Donovan Edwards. And you could argue that especially with, Corum being such a star, that having Edwards could be just as significant in case you've got any sort of further injury. I think Corum's going to give it a go. I would be very surprised if he doesn't play in this game. That is the message that he's been sending both publicly, and I think that we will see him on the field. Now, if he is limited at all, that's why I say the availability of Edwards could be just as important, just because he's not going to be able to give you the full workload. He is not going to be able to have that same kind of burst. I think that this is a game that is going to come down to red zone execution, and it's going to come down to getting touchdowns instead of field goals. Because Michigan in particular has not been very strong in this area. Jake Moody is a phenomenal place kicker, but Jake Moody has had to kick too many field goals this year, in my opinion. And he's had to kick too many field goals because J.J. McCarthy can't make those throws in tough windows in the red zone. And that while that Michigan offensive line can beat you and bruise you between the 20s, when it comes down to getting in scoring position, they haven't always been able to punch it in for touchdowns. That's what we saw against Illinois, and it's what we've seen against some of the better defenses on their schedule. And I think that Ohio State is one of the better defenses on Michigan's schedule. Ohio State has not been perfect in that area either, though, that's one of those issues where Ohio State might be more dangerous from 40 yards out than they are from 4 yards out just because of the way they can stretch the field. Michigan doesn't have that with J.J. McCarthy like Ohio State has with C.J. Stroud. So I think that while Michigan will be able to play the bully ball game a lot in the middle of the field, if they can't punch those in for touchdowns, they're not going to lose this game. I mean, they're not going to win this game. And that's where I think that a lot of this tilts towards Ohio State in Ohio State's favor. I think it'll be a little bit lower scoring just because we're doing a lot of settling for field goals. Wouldn't be surprised if Ryan Day doesn't get risky with it early. But ultimately, one of these passing attacks is dangerous, and the other one's comparatively limited. So a Michigan upset would – listen, a Michigan upset would give Ryan Day a losing record to mm-hmm. Jim Harbaugh. A Michigan upset would bring to light a lot of frustration about these Ohio State teams that have had national championship talent and not been able to convert. I think Ohio State's playing with an immense amount of pressure, but the X's and O's and the talent advantage is on their side. So I see the Buckeyes winning.
Chip, I got a minute for you to cover this, so I'll ask the question briefly. Georgia wins out, they're in. Ohio State, the same. Let's say TCU runs the table. I think USC loses to Notre Dame tomorrow. So if we take the Trojans out, that last spot, Clemson as a one-loss ACC champion versus a two-loss Alabama, who gets the nod?
Clemson. The quality of being able to play a North, as long as North Carolina beats NC State mm-hmm. later today, then that will be worth more than what Alabama gets against Auburn. And you could argue that even South Carolina as a bowl team and Auburn, which would not be a bowl team, that Clemson would get two victories compared to Alabama's one that would both be of a higher quality than what Alabama has. And they told us that conference championships were going to matter in this college football playoff system when they first debuted it in 2014. 12-1 Clemson gets in, ACC champion Clemson gets in over 10-2 Alabama non-conference champion.
Chip, terrific analysis. Enjoyed the conversation. I fill in a ton throughout the holidays, so I hope to have the opportunity to reconnect with you in the future. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
Chip Patterson dropping a y'all, and that makes college football, to me, sound all the more authentic. Second hour winding down. Do I even have a shot at this last hour getting on the air? Normally, super plugged in, coherent, competent, attentive to detail. Tom, he's checked out. Ritt has been gone since, I don't know, 1984.
Damn right. That's how I
United run. States and England about to get underway. All you soccer aficionados. Hang with me. I'm talking NFL. Counter-programming. We'll get into what went down last night in Minnesota. Should we really be buying Kirk Cousins just after one primetime victory? We'll walk through what we saw and our takeaways from both the Minnesota and New England perspective and take you around the league. I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome. Final hour straight ahead here on CBS Sports Radio.